I don't know how to feed off of the rabbi's introduction. It's very difficult when you come off. Some of these things are spectacular. They are, in a sense, very spectacular, but it's really been a challenge for me thinking about giving this lecture. You know, we have our classes on Monday nights for many years, and in a class, you're not being taped. You know your group. And these ideas that Rabbi Sassoon, Alav HaShalom, presented to us, for it was almost, we spent almost 17 years learning with him, and he really introduced a lot of very interesting ideas to us. And it's hard for me to think about how, within a three-lecture series, to present some of these ideas and how they impacted the work on Tehillim. But we will try. I looked at the flyer on what this lecture series is about. It says that we're going to do structure and then patterns and then sequence in Tehillim. And we'll try and follow that as much as we can. But let me say that we might find ourselves bouncing back and forth a little bit between these different parts of the lecture in order to properly convey this picture to you that we see in Tehillim these days. Let me start off by saying all of what you're going to hear, or anything that we're speaking here, is an extension of Rabbi Sassoon's work. Rabbi Sassoon spoke to us extensively about many areas of the Tanakh, but one of them that he concentrated a lot on as far as symbolism with the covenant was, in fact, in Tehillim, besides the Torah. The other area that he concentrated on was Tehillim. And also, I'd like to say that Rabbi Shama, I watched in the last 4 years the development of his commentary on the Torah. I really have been lucky enough to be involved watching it happen and discussing the weekly sheets as they were coming out, which now, with God's help, Be'ezrat Hashem, that will be a book that will be coming out hopefully in the springtime. And he's had a tremendous impact and involvement in a lot of this work that we're doing on Tehillim. And that work helped me in my work as we were going along in these last few years. Let me quickly say about this work started approximately, seriously, in around 1985, just around that time, when the software for the textual analysis of the Tanakh was put together, and I started to use it. And my intention at that time was to try and find proof and to try and support Rabbi Sassoon in a lot of the different types of symbolism that he said you find in the Torah that we found to be, in fact, very spectacular. So at that time, when I had the software and I started work on it, One of the things, besides all of the work, centered on two areas, the Torah and Tehillim. And at the very beginning, certain ideas started to become very clear. And through the years, this work has developed at different stages, till finally, in the last year, it ended up with finding sequence in Tehillim, which I think is the most exciting of all the work. And hopefully, by the third lecture, we'll be able to really give you an idea of what we mean by sequence in Tehillim. Let me give you a very quick picture over here. I tried to put down for those of you who are not familiar. Let me tell you that one of the most important things that he stressed was the fact that Tehillim was written with nivu'ah, with prophecy. When we say prophecy, we don't mean in the sense of prophetic telling the future. We mean with inspiration. We mean with nivu'ah, as we know our Nevi'im wrote. He talked about Tehillim as being Tehillim is, it consists of, let me just tell you very quickly, it consists of 150 chapters, 150 mizmorim. It has five books in it, which interestingly enough, we have somewhat of a tradition that says that these five books are similar in some respect. It's like there's five books in the Torah, there's five books in Tehillim. These five books, when we look at these five books, we don't think that these five books were put in at a later time, but we believe that these five books were broken up this way originally from the Nevi, who gave it to us. Of course, the minute I say that, we have the problem of Davidic authorship of Tehillim, and I sort of like stumble on my words. How am I going to get to the next stage over here? What are we going to do? I'd rather not at this second talk about authorship. I'd rather just say I want to stress the fact that we're talking about a book that is, in fact, prophetic. Tehillim, we all know, because we use it to pray. It's part of our prayer. It's filled with every aspect of our... If you just put out those handouts a minute, 1 second, and let everybody have it in their hands just so they get a quick idea. I don't know the order of these handouts. Let me look at one. Our prayers, we use Tehillim. Our prayers were structured around Tehillim. They're built around Tehillim. A tremendous amount of our prayers that we say are, in fact, Tehillim. These sheets that you have, the front sheet is just a very, very quickly, it's a, I don't know how exactly this front sheet is, but I think it's pretty extensive. And it shows that out of the 150 Mizmorim, we read something, it says at the bottom over here, about 57 Mizmorim throughout the year. They're over here from, you know, there's 150 of them, so it starts with 17, ends in 150. Please don't hold me to this. These were taken from a Sidud with the daily, you know, going from page one to the last page, and they were done. I don't know if it's exacting. I don't know if you have every mizmor here. It was simply to give you an idea of how extensive, in fact, the rabbis, how much the rabbis, when the liturgy was put together, how much Tehillim, how much of a role it played. Now, these 57 mizmorim, if in fact we all knew them well, it wouldn't be necessary, I don't think, to have a lot of discussion over here in this lecture series, but the fact is that what we find is that most people do not know the mizmorim well. They say it, we say it all the time, we read them every day, yet if you ask somebody what the mizmor says, they have difficulty explaining what's going on in the mizmor. You see over here, let's see, on this sheet, on the bottom, you see the 145 through 150. That is the daily one that we say when we say Tehillel David, and we finish with Hallelujah. Those are the standard ones that happen every single day. Then you see Hallel going up from the bottom of the sheet. You see the holiday, the festival Mizmorim. You see the Shabbat Mizmorim, and so on and so forth. Since they're in numerical order of mizmor, everything over here, the sort that you're looking at is not based on the grouping. It happens to be the shaharit ones all come together because, in fact, we read the last six mizmorim of Tehillim every single day. So to speak, we conclude. We pray the conclusion of Tehillim as if we've read the entire thing. We conclude with the last six mizmorim. At the very beginning of this work, prior to looking at these last six mizmorim, I did a lot of analysis on the covenant, berit, and the symbolism of the covenant in Tehillim. In the process of doing that, I found some very interesting things. And they are that the covenant, as we know it, the symbolism of the covenant of the berit that exists between God, Hashem, and the Jewish people is represented, according to Rabbi Sassoon, by the numbers 8 and 13. They play a big role. These numbers, if I'll just mention very quickly some of the key numbers that we see. I'm quoting here from his book, from the book that quotes Rabbi Sassoon, Natan Chochma L'Shlomo. Adam gives birth to Shed at 130 years old and lives another 800 years. By the way, whenever we say these numbers, we're talking about 13 or multiples thereof by 10. We're talking about 8 or multiples thereof. So 8 or 80 or 800 or 8,000 or 8 million is the same. Same thing goes for 13. It says in the Torah, Moshe stands in front of Paro when he is 80 years old. It also says that Yaakov gives you an age, how old he was when he was standing in front of Paro. It says he's 130. Or Brit Milah. We know that Abraham makes Brit Milah on his two children, one at 8, the other one at 13. We know that David, in Shemuel, at the very end of Shemuel, he does a census, which has lots of difficulties. When he does the census, the numbers come back 1,300,000 people, 800,000 of Yisrael, and 500,000 of Yehuda. Again, the number is an extremely large number. 1,300,000 people, the population of Israel today is 5 million. And to say that 3,000 years ago the number was 1,300,000 is an extremely large number, and Rabbi Sassoon used to feel that that number was a covenantal number, talking about that they were the B'nai Yisrael, or the B'nai HaBerit, or the children of the covenant, and that these numbers therefore reflected the covenant. We know that the Mishkan is dedicated on Yom HaShemini. That's in the Torah. That opens up, in fact, one of the parashiyot that we read on Shabbat. We know that there's a holiday called Shemini Aseret, which is in Sukkot, a holiday in and of itself called the eighth day, and Shabuot, and the Shemitah, and the Yobel, and Mikveh, in certain instances in the Torah. All of those seem to take place on the seventh. Shabuot is counting 7 weeks, but in fact, Shavuot starts on the first day of the eighth week of the counting. You count 7 weeks, 7 days a week, 49 days, but Shavuot does not land on the 49th day. It lands on the 50th day, which is the first day of the eighth week. The Yobel is the same thing. It's not 49 years. It's on the first day of the eighth week, of the eighth cycle of 7 years. The mikveh and a person becoming tahor comes into motion when, it says 7 days. In fact, when the individual in the Torah, when the Tahara comes, it comes on the eighth day subsequent. It's 7 complete days. The purification process is completed on the eighth day. One of the first things that I did knowing these, by the way, I'd like to tell you, I only mentioned these very quickly. Maybe in the course of this series, I'll be able to come back to this point again. I hopefully will. But I have to tell you, I only mentioned these just to sort of get, there are a lot of people in the audience here who are not familiar with this. There are hundreds of these that we have found. When I say hundreds, I'm not exaggerating. They're not, and they're also not midrashic. They're facts. Facts that this symbolism is referred to again and again and again throughout all of the Torah. Almost anywhere you look, I'm telling you, it's very, very extensive. Hopefully, I'll be able to show you more of these. I didn't just mention these 10. There are more. Oh, I didn't mention two important ones. I'm sorry. In the Torah, you have the census. The census is taken, and you end up with a count, and it says, V'helevim lohut pekidu, were not counted amongst them. You come up with 603,550 people. And then later on, you find that the Leviim have a number, a count of 8,580 people. You add the two numbers together, you have 612,130 people. So the 130 remainder is clear. The 612 we'll talk about. It's a little difficult for me to say this very quickly, but there is such a thing as numerical value of numbers, and Berit is referred to as 612, because Bet is 2, and Resh is 200, and Yud is 10, and Taf is 400, and you have 612. This is called, I hate to use this expression, Gematria, in this day and age, because, as Rabbi Sassoon used to say, Gematria has become abused to the point where it doesn't have any meaning, but he felt that originally there was a tradition, and an ancient tradition, that went all the way back to the Torah, and that in fact it had its sources not from early rabbinic times, but rather from prophetic times, which was very interesting, because we laughed when we heard this, and we say we're not interested in listening to this. But in fact, after doing more research, we found out that it does have. And of course, as per Rabbi Shammah's in the book, as you will see, when he talks about Parashat Vayera, we know that God's name is equal to 26, Maybe in the course of this series, we'll have the opportunity to show you how, when God introduces to Moshe Rabbeinu his name, when he said, when he says, my name is Yud-Keh Vav-Keh, my name is, you didn't know me that way. Abraham and Yitzhak and Yaakov did not know me as Yud-Keh Vav-Keh, but now you know me that way. In that piece, it's all symbolic of 26 and multiples thereof, and it's very exciting to see. I'd like to, if I have the opportunity, show that to you possibly next week, so that if you see that, you'll understand how we took application from that statement in the Torah, and how we saw when you take it and you apply it to areas of Tehillim, you find, in fact, that it works extensively throughout Tehillim. So, again, I repeat, I'm sorry for those of you who are not familiar with this terminology, with words that have numerical values, etc., etc., but please try and bear with me, and I'll try and explain it as we go along. In any event, there are many, many, many examples, like I just now told you. They're all over the place. It's flooded. This covenantal symbolism is all over. The reason the covenantal symbolism exists is very simple. As Rabbi Shammah's book is going to show, the covenant. It's called Sefer HaBerit. We are the children of the covenant. We are the people, we are the nation that represents this covenant to the world. And the Torah is written by its very structure using the Berit, using the covenant treaties that we know existed. But of course, it sets it forth. Even the Ten Commandments is put forth in that kind of a context. The Berit is found everywhere, symbolically, structure-wise, content-wise, it's always being emphasized. Similarly, we took these kind of ideas and made application to them in Tehillim, and wanted to see if that in fact happens. One of the first things I did at that juncture when I started, when these computer programs came out, where I could do analysis of the text in a rapid way, where I wouldn't have to sit down and count something or anything like that, was to look into the name of David, who we knew at the time is not necessarily the author of the Mizmorim. But Rabbi Sassoon said that the symbolism of David is found throughout, his name is found throughout Tehillim, and he gave us the reason for it. So I went, and I said that the two key words that I'm interested in looking up in Tehillim were the name David, and the word Halil. Halil means to praise. This is Tehillim. And I went and I looked at that, and I made a dictionary of all of Tehillim with the computer, and it does it in about 2 minutes, something that would take you really very, very long time to make a dictionary of Tehillim. But once we had all the data in there, we got it. And sure enough, we found that the covenantal numbers showed up for Halil and David, and did not, in fact, occur in any other word. The numbers were, David occurs 88 times in Tehillim, and Halil occurs as He Lamed Lamed, the dictionary form, without the one occurrence of Lohu Lalu, in Mizmor 78, which is He Vav Lamed Lamed, it occurs 88 times. Now, when I did that, you have to understand I was very taken aback, because I did not expect to find this. My list had 2,205 words in it. Out of 2,205 words, I was only interested in two. There's 2,205 dictionary forms in Tehillim. It's a 20,000 word text. There are 2,205 different words. That's a lot. A few thousand words in the dictionary of Tehillim. When I saw that, I was taken aback. I said, I can't believe it. These are the only... When I started that piece of the research, I was only looking for two words. And sure enough, they are the only two words that occur that amount of times, and no other words. So I was very taken aback. I said, the statistics, the odds on this are slim, and I was surprised. Subsequent to that, I continued to work, and I worked a lot around Mizmor number 80. And Mizmor number 80 was, in fact, a mizmor that I said, since it's the 80th one, are interesting things happening in it. Are there covenantal things happening in it? And so on and so forth. And I analyzed it a lot. And I eventually made a sheet. Okay, real fast, while you're looking at this, I made a spreadsheet, like you know, Excel, Microsoft Excel, Lotus, one of those kind of spreadsheets. I took it and I put all the data that I had into Elim in it. And this data produced information that was, to me, very, very significant. It was significant in the sense that it, again, proved out the what we suspected, that the symbolism of the covenant exists in the text of Tehillim in an extensive way. When you get these sheets, I'll talk about it real fast, but basically what I will tell you is as you're getting the sheets, I really want to try and spend only, if possible, just a couple of minutes on these sheets to make the following point. These sheets have how many words there are in each mizmor and how many verses there are in each mizmor, and it has the cumulative words through the mizmorim and the cumulative verses. In other words, if I have one in front of me, if you get up to the end of the second book or the first book, you'll see a column that says cumulative forward verses, and it says, In the first book, it says, cumulative forward verses, there are 637 verses to the end of the first book, and there are words, 5,254. So, when I did this work, I looked through these numbers. It was relatively easy to produce a spreadsheet like this, even though it has a lot of data in it, because you have to remember I had it all on computer, and I was able to produce this information relatively very quickly. I was only interested in one thing. I was interested in looking basically at the third book where the 80th Mizmor occurs. And I wanted to see if the covenantal numbers are found centering around the 80th Mizmor. So if everybody looks at your second page, if you have them now, it says book 3, total 61, 368, 1500. You see all of that, folks? Okay, go up to the 80th chapter. If you see it, I think it's in blue. Do you see that? Okay, take a look at how many verses there are when you get up to the 80th chapter of Tehillim. Does anybody see it? 1,313. Verses, and then I'll explain to you guys. It goes like this. Listen, there are 79 chapters prior to the 80th one. You take the 79 chapters and you see how many verses there are in the 79 chapters up to the last verse, so that that last verse will be the verse right before the verse that starts the 80th chapter. You get that? Okay, if you look to the right, it says, somebody over here said, wow, so what do you see there? Oh, you see that. Those are the words. Now I'll explain to you. The 80th chapter, if you look in the column that says cumulative forward verses, says 1313 in red. It means that up till the 80th chapter, the verse right before it, chapter 79, verse 72, has 1300, it's 1313 verses up to that point in time. If you look all the way to the right where it says cumulative reverse words, you see that column? It's in blue. Cumulative reverse words simply means if you take the 80th chapter, first word, and you count from there all the way till the end of Tehillim, you get a certain amount of words. And the amount of words are 8,888 words. You got that? Right. Which means, in effect, that Tehillim consists of as follows. 1,313 verses, followed by 8,888 words.
At this point, I think
really, I'd like to spend a lot more time talking about this aspect of it. I can only tell you that even in the spreadsheets that you have, the amount of symbolism that we found that refers to the Bereishit is extensive and throughout the entire book. Hopefully, we're going to show some of that as we continue. But I'd like to show you a statement in the Gemara. If you take a look at your sheets, I'd like to read something very interesting to you. I think it's the page after, it's in Hebrew. For those of you who read Hebrew, the Gemara is in Masechet Kiddushin, the tractate Kiddushin, on page 30, side 1, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. For those of you who speak Hebrew, Joy Museri, you could look at the, where it says database Talmud Bavli. This comes out of the computer one. So that's in Hebrew, but we're going to read the English for purposes of those for those of you who are not familiar with the Aramaic in the Talmud. And we're going to read, that's the sheet that says Kiddushin in English at the top, it says 38. You all have those papers, folks? If you don't, please let me know, we'll get you one. Because it's hard to follow this if you don't see it. Whoever has sheets, do you have any more sheets, anybody? Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Now, if you'll take a look at where, do you all have these sheets? They're English translations of the Gemara Kiddushin, page 30A, it says in the upper right-hand corner. You have it, folks? Take a look at the column that says as follows. It says the early scholars. Everybody have it? The early scholars were called Sofrim, because Sofrim, the word Sofrim can mean from the word to count. So it's saying the word scribe is what you're used to saying, but in fact they were called Sofrim. It's like, you know, dual meaning. The word means scribe, but it also means count. So they were called Sofrim, which we now call a scribe, because they were counters. They used to count all the letters of the Torah. Thus they said, the Vav in Gahon marks half the letters of the Torah, Darosh, Darash, half the words, V'hit Galah, half the verses. So, you just got the letters, the words, and verse, halfway mark of the Torah. They said they used to know. They had a number, whatever that number was, and they said, this is the middle mark of letters, middle mark of words, middle mark of verses. Then it says, the boar out of the wood, miyaad, doth ravage it. The ayin of yaad marks half of Tehillim. But he, being full of compassion, forgiveth their iniquity, v'hu rachum yechaper avon, half of the verses. Now, if you'll stop for a minute,
very quickly, you'll see these sheets in front of you, and you'll get the general idea. It says, verse, word, letter differences from the Gemara and our present-day text in Torah Tehillim.
The fact of the matter is, folks, is that none of these work. All of these statistics that we just now got from the Gemara is off. They don't work. The numbers don't work. And what the rabbis told us, we got a bit of a problem with it. But that's the facts of life. We have our Gemara. I mean, we have our Torah today. And the Torah that we have, its midpoints don't agree. If everybody has one, does everybody have one now? Are we good? Okay. Everybody with it? Yes? No? Somebody? If anyone doesn't have one, raise your hand. Okay. What you see here is very simple. Let me say it real quick, simplify it for you. You have over here, it says, word, citation, 50%, total, average, etc. The first box says letters. The Gemara says Gahon. If you look down on the bottom, you have the citation, Vayikra, chapter 11, verse 42. Vayikra is the third of the five books, the middle book of the Torah, and it is located somewhere in the middle, right? There are, we don't know how many letters they were talking about, but we know that based on our present-day text, you see where it says 50%? Well, look at the total number to the right. It says 304,850. Now, look, we're giving you an approximate number. That's the number that I have in my computer. Don't come to me and tell me there's 304,852 or 49 or heserot, yeterot, and so on and so forth. Let's go with the number for right now. By the way, the text has been checked many times. It's been checked against other databases, and there is a very high degree of accuracy in the text that I use in the computer. I could say that it's been checked and rechecked somewhere. It's been checked by a person. It's been checked against another database and then another database and then a third time.
So this text has really been worked and worked over the last 12 years, numerous, numerous times, letter for letter matches. We do have a very, very accurate text. In fact, years back, you know the people who do the checks on the Sefer Torah? They do a computerized... What's their name? Yeah, they came to me years back. They're the ones who came and took my text to use it for the checks against Sefer Torah. So we believe we have a very high degree of accuracy. When they came to me at that time, they said, could we use your text? And in fact, they got it from me. So we really think that we have very, very, very high degree of accuracy here. In any event, based on our 304,850 letter text, their middle point is 100 and their middle point, Gahon, would be at 157,239. Ours would land on the word Hehazer, which is in Vayikra chapter 8, 4,814 letters earlier. Did you get that, folks? You see that where it says 50%?
So that's what I was 8,000.
4,814 letters would imply that there's 10,000 letters missing. It would imply it. Relax. It would imply it. The Gemara, the words, the Gemara says, Darosh Darash, Vayikra 10:16. Based on that, it would be the 40,922nd word. Everybody seeing that column? That ours lands at Vayked Eshehu in Vayikra 8:15, right? And that is 930 words later, again, later than us. We are 930 words, which would imply, Gabe, 1,860 words are missing, right? The last one are verses. V'hitgalah lands in chapter 13, verse 33. That our text is 5,853 pisukim or 5,845. My text has 5,853 because it's based on Leningrad Codex, and it has the Ten Commandments broken up into little, you know, lo tisach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, etc., etc. So it's very, very few differences. In either event, I use 5,853 just for the purposes of this paper. The difference is we would be at 2,927, which would land at Vayasim over there in Vayikra chapter 8, 159 verses. So that is the way the realities of the Gemara statement work out. If you notice, by the way, we're missing certain data for the Gemara, and I gave you a little side average here where it says letters per word. The average letters per word in the Torah are 3.81. The average words per verse are 13.67. So you have close to 14 words in a verse, close to 4 letters in each word. Based on that, based on the letter differences, it shouldn't have been, just very quickly side point that I want to complicate. You see where it says difference 930 words in the middle box in the Torah section? It should have been 1263 based on that. That statement that I'm making to you that it should have been 1263 very quickly can't be too far off, because they didn't. The 3.181 average works whether you have a text that's missing or has text. It's so many words that it's based on that it's what you could call almost reality based. If it's 3.81, there the text breakdowns that the Gemara gave do in fact not work throughout. It should have been 1,263 words. It shouldn't have been 159 verses. It should have been 92 based on an average of 3.67, which is also very accurate because we're talking about almost 80,000 words. In Tehillim, very quickly, the Gemara says, Miya'ar. The word Miya'ar comes in Tehillim, chapter 80, the famous chapter 80, verse 14, and that is, Yecharsimena Hazir Miya'ar Viziz Sadai Yirena. That statement is where the Gemara says the ayin of Mi'ar is the middle letter. It doesn't say that. You have to assume it means that because that's the only thing it could be. That's what the Gemara says. And therefore, they come out again off by 3,820 letters. We don't have any information on words from the Gemara. And then the next piece of information we have is verses. And this is where it gets interesting. Take a look at the Gemara middle point. Behudahum is in chapter 78, verse 38, There are 72 verses in that chapter. And my center point that I have in my text, and you all do, is chapter 78, verse 36. There are 2,527 verses in Tehillim. So, based, again, you see on the based on the averages, should have been 122 verses based on the information that we got. And sure enough, the verses come very, very close to the reality. You with me? We're only two verses away from today, from what the Gemara says to today. Now, continuing in that sheet, it says as follows. Rabbi Joseph propounded, does the Vav Kohen belong to the first half or the second? He says, if that's the middle, which side is it on, the right side or the left side? Said the scholars to him, let a scroll of the Torah be brought and we'll count them. Did not Rabbi Bar Hana say, in fact, they didn't leave from there till the scroll of the Torah was brought and they actually counted them. By the way, it took an awfully long time. You have to know, it's hundreds of thousands of letters. They had to do it who knows how many times. They were thoroughly versed in defective and full readings, but we are not. For those of you who are talking about Yetirot and Hasirot, they knew them. We don't know. So if there's an extra yud or a missing yud, an extra vav or a missing vav, we don't know today, the Gemara is saying. It says, but those guys, those people, when they counted, they knew what they were doing. Rabbi Joseph propounded, does Vayit Galach belong to the first half or the second? Said Abayetim for the verses, at least we can bring a scroll and count them. And the verses too, we're not certain. For when Rabbi Hab, but at that came, he said, in the west, Palestine, the following verse is divided into three, and the Lord said it to Moses, lo, I come to three in a thick cloud. Okay. Once again, all they're doing here is saying that they worked on this and they were very interested. The main thing I want to show you from this is the Gemara. They were interested in knowing about this. The subject did come up in their studies, and the Gemara does go out of it, does, in fact, in its final compiled state, discuss it. Now, the last paragraph. Our rabbis taught, there are 5,888 verses in the Torah. The Psalms exceed these by 8, while Chronicles are less by 8. And that's the end of the piece. Okay. The most interesting observation that you make on this Gemara, folks, is as follows. Two interesting observations. One, they only talk about two books. They only talk about center points of Torah and center points of Tehillim. Furthermore, and they're interested in knowing the midpoints of these two books. Why didn't they talk about Yehoshua or Shoftim or Shemuel or Milachim? Or, for that matter, Iyob or Mishlei or Rut or Echa? They only talk about two books. And when I saw this, I was very taken aback because they said, wow, it's just like we always spoke. Rabbi Sassoon always emphasized to us that these two books were the ones that had symbolism in them in a way where you can do an analysis. And he worked on this extensively. Furthermore, you'll notice that it says that the verses in the Torah are how much? 5,888. There's those 5888 numbers again. We in fact don't have 5,888 verses in the Torah. We have 58, 45, or 53. Again, the verses are off. The tradition says that there are verses in Devarim. Well, not tradition. There are people who say, let's say, that the verses in Devarim should be split further. Now, the question comes like this. How can you have 5,888 verses in the Torah and eight more? Again, you see it's eight, by the way. It's all symbolic. 5,888, eight more, eight less. Evidently, I'm trying to tell you that the rabbis saw symbolism in these numbers. They used these numbers as the way we're using them in the course of these lectures here. They were familiar with them, and they said, well, that one has eight more. This one has eight less. The number is 5,888. The number of the Levium is 8,580. See the numbers coming up again and again. So, it gives a lot of strength to us. By the way, you can't have 5,888 plus 8 verses in Tehillim. If Tehillim today consists of an average of 7.74 words per verse, you would end up with a verse, every verse would have about 3 words in it. How could you have close to 6,000 verses in Tehillim? It only has 20,000 words. Every verse would be 3 words. So you see clearly there's a good chance, folks, to say that Tehillim, in fact, consists, when they say those verses, they're talking about, you know how Tehillim works? It has like, you make a statement, and then you make another statement. Ashrei yoshvei b'techa, odi haluchah sila. It's called parallelism. Parallelism means that one side of the verse and the other side of the verse in some way contrast to each other. The parallelistic lines are very, very sophisticated, discussed at length, and this parallelism that exists between these two sides of the verse plays a key role in understanding Tehillim. Furthermore, the parallelism has in it many times what we call chiasmus, which means, I have over here, let me read it to you very quickly if I find the paper, my own papers. Parallelism. I'm going to quote. Parallelism. Parallelism. I'm quoting to you from poetry in the Bible, I think it's called, by Kugel. A, he says like this. You have A, I'm going to show you examples inside now. Just want to say these to you so we can define these two things before we go into the text we're going to learn tonight. A, pause. B, again, let's give any example. Who can give me any example? Rabbi, any example of any kind of mizmor where you have A and a pause? B. Give me anything. Yeah, just A, where you have an A and a pause. No, no, just a pause. Every day I will bless you, and I will praise your name forever. So that's where you have a statement. That's where you have the pause. Pause. Is the end of the verse. If they had, in fact, in their text, not the verses breakdown, but what we call the midpoint of each one of the verses, with 25, 27, you'd already end up over 5,000. There are verses in Tehillim which have three breakpoints, a triple. That's a triple. So you have a double, you have a triple. If you had X amount of the triples and the majority of them doubles, you'd get close to the statement that they had. So they had some kind of tradition like that. Now, B, by being connected to A, carrying it further, echoing it, defining it, restating it, contrasting with it, it does not matter which, has an emphatic seconding character, and it is this more than any aesthetic of symmetry or paralleling which is at the heart of biblical. You see it constantly that it's either a further point, an emphasis, taking it to the next level, or commenting on it in some way, it's constant. As far as chiasmus, the word chiasmus, because the word will come up when we'll look inside now, it's an inversion of order in sequential literary parallel elements, such as what Dr. Rumi was talking about, A, B, B, A. You'll say something else, then you'll go back to the first point, or you'll say the second point again and go back to the first point. So A, B, B, A, B, C, C, B, A, et cetera, et cetera.
I did my best to give you as much of a introduction into these things. The hour is late, and I really want to learn a mizmor, so if you'll just hand these out, we'll try and work on mizmor 67. Mizmor 67, the reason I'm working on it tonight is because mizmor 67 is a well-known mizmor. It is the one that we read in the very beginning of our tefillah in Shaharit. If you'll try not to look at the sheets and all the colors and all the things for a minute and give me a moment, please. I wanted to give out Tehillim books so you could learn it inside before giving you the sheet. But bear with me. Please hold off for a minute so I could just explain to you why I'm doing this mizmor. This mizmor, do we have a sidur here? Where the menorah in it?
Yes.
Where the menorah? Yeah, if you could open up to the menorah. This mizmor, we read every morning before Hashem Elech. It's in every sidur in the form of a menorah. In the menorah, it contains the words of the mizmor. You see it, folks?
For those of you not familiar with it, this is what it looks like. It's a little menorah. You've seen it? Everybody's seen it. Okay. 67. That's this mizmor. Lemonetzab bin yinot mizmor shir. I don't know. Do the Ashkenazim have it? The Ashkenazim have it in their sidur? The Hasidic ones do. Okay. I'd like to, if possible, now read this mizmor. I'd like to learn it together. And I hope in the process of learning this mizmor, we'll be able to get a picture of the structure. We talked about, we said we're going to talk about structure tonight, about the structure of Psalms, and about parallelism and chiasmus. This is the, what we call the classic example of a psalm that would explain all these terms. And for those of you not familiar, you'll become familiar very quickly. For those of you familiar, we'll try and highlight it to you. Elohim Yehonenu. By the way, this is important. Just as a quick side point, remember there are five books. This mizmor comes up in the second book towards the end. Okay? Elohim Yehonenu. I'm not going to discuss the superscripture for right now. We'll discuss superscriptures in the second. Hopefully, we'll get to it in the second lecture. Elohim Yehonenu. Hashem, Elohim, one of the names of Hashem. In almost 90%. In the second and third books, Elohim becomes predominant. And in the fourth and fifth books, Yudke Vavke becomes predominant again. In this one, we're in the second book, so we're in these Elohims. Elohim, Yehonenu. He will have compassion on us. Or somebody follow me in English. Vibarichenu, and he will bless us. Ya'ir panav itanu. He will light his face towards us, his countenance towards us. Selah. The word Selah, as we know, is not a word. The word Selah itself is the equivalent of like a stop point. It's used in multiple ways in Tehillim. Let's call it for purposes of this conversation. In the old days when you had in the Western Union, used to, and the faxes you don't have, but used to go like this. Stop. Instead of a period, you didn't have a period. So you had to put the word stop to know, because there were no periods used.
Wasn't there a musical notation?
Well, that's what I said. There are multiple uses. I said for purposes just now, just for purposes of this conversation, let's call it a stop. Even if it is that, it is not part of the text. Even if it's what you say, it's out of the text. It's something that exists around the text. So, Hashem, have mercy on us. For those of you who are Kohanim here or are familiar with Birkat Kohanim, you realize, of course, over here that you have a little mini Birkat Kohanim. You say Adonai v'yishvarecha, Adonai pelav v'necha v'necha, you say Adonai pelav v'necha v'yasim l'cha shalom. So you have Yeberechenu and Yair Penav Itanu. It's like a little tiny mini Birkat Kohanim. That's verse the first verse after superscripture. Second verse in the text. Third verse. Ladat ba'aretz tarkecha, to know in the land your way. Bechol goyim yeshuatecha, in all the nations your salvation. End of the verse. So, you should bless us so that your way will be known, and you should shine your countenance on us so that your way will be known in the land. Yoducha Amim Elohim, people should give thanks. Nations should give thanks to you, God. Yoducha Amim Kulam. All the nations should give thanks to you. Yismihu, they should be joyous. Vireninu, and sing out in joy. Le'umim, the nations, again, the peoples. Ki tishpot amim mishor, when you judge the people with equity. Ul'umim ba'aretz tanhem, and the peoples in the land you will lead. For those of you who are not familiar with Hebrew at all, in the back of your sheets, 67 is there with Hebrew and English translated right behind it, all the way in the back. For those of you, some of the ladies, maybe some of the men, all the way in the back of your sheets, there is a Hebrew-English word for word, like it's one under the other, all the way in the back. You could see it, and I gave it to you for there. Do you see it, folks? Anybody see what it looks like? Do you have it? It looks like one of these, okay? So if you need it, just go ahead and look. All right? You see it? Everybody see it? We get another Selah now at the end of verse 5. Yaducha Amim Elohim, verse 6, we're continuing. Yaducha Amim Elohim, they should give thanks to you, Hashem, the people. Yaducha Amim Kulam. You realize, of course, as we're reading, that we're already in a repetition of verse 4. Eretz Natna Yibulah, verse 7, the land gives forth its produce. Yibarechenu Elohim, God should bless us. Elohenu, the Lord our God should bless us. Yibarechenu Elohim, God should bless us. V'yiru'u oto kol ha'aretz, and all the ends of the earth, all the reaches of the world, should be in awe of God. So, it's very simple. With these sheets, I tried my best to outline to you how we see chiasmus and parallelism. Parallelism, for example, you have very big parallelism. The first word has the first, the second pasu verse. First word is Elohim, and then you have Elohim occurring all the way down. If you look in the column that says word total, the 48th word. Then it has Yibarechenu. Yibarechenu comes at the end. You see that there. You have Eretz in number 3. You have Eretz coming up on the flip side of the center point of the Mitzmor at 32 and at 41 and at 53, the last word. Now, so there's where you see it on the entire Mizmor. You see from beginning to end, opening, closing. Now, of course, where you see the chiasmus work in spades, take a look at your, in fact, you have, I put the letters for you here, the A, B, C, D, D, C, B, A, the second column. You see the word Amim, you see the word Amim. That is a complete repeat, that entire verse. It is. You see there it says, Yaducha Amim Elohim, Yaducha Amim Kulam, which is from 19 through 23. And then you have Yaducha Amim Elohim, Yaducha Amim Kulam, which is 35 through 40. So you have two verses. Yes.
But then the color coding is...
Hold off on your color coding for a minute, just for a minute. The main thing I want you to look at is that verse number 6 and verse number 4 are duplicate verses around the middle verse. They are exactly the same. Verse number 4 and verse number 6. You see that, everybody? Those are duplicates. In the middle, you have... Everybody see it? Are you with me? Yeah, I will. One second. It's hard. They got a lot of people in there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you want, that's true. You see, by the way, if you notice, you have red, blue, green, and then green, blue, red. Those verses are the verses in the color coding that show you how the verses compare. Elohim Yohanim Barakhenu Yohanim Sela is compared to the last red, and the two blues are duplicates, and the two greens are duplicates, I mean, and the two blues relate to each other. Everybody see that? For those of you who are fluent or comfortable with Tehillim, of course, this is all ABCD, as this sheet says. But what I want to point out to you is the following. The symmetry of the Mizmor is complete. There's no aspect of this Mizmor that isn't written with perfect symmetry. Take a look at the verse word count column on the right. There are 7 words in verse 2. There are 6. There are 6. There are 6 words to the middle verse. 6 words to the end. 6 words, and 7. So you have a 7, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 7. So again, you have, take a look at your letters. A is to A, B to B, C to C, with D in the middle. That's as far as the words in the verses. As far as the bigger structure, we discussed it. You have 2 duplicate verses. You have the colors, red to red, blue to blue, green to green. Those are clear. They speak for themselves. But there's something that people don't necessarily realize when they look at this Mizmor. And that is the first column. You see where it says key word count? That's the most important thing that I'm... One of the most important things I want to show you this evening. And that is that this Mizmor, what is it talking about, folks? This Mizmor is talking about the nations of the world, giving thanks to God, praising God, recognizing God. When the Birkat Kohanim, when that Beracha comes from you to us, God, the nations of the world will know and see your ways, and they'll all give thanks to you. And the world, the nations of the world, the key center verse, Yismahu b'ra'anu le'umim, all the nations will be joyous and sing out in joy, Ki tishpot amim mishor, when you judge the nations with equity, when justice will reign in the world. Ulumim ba'aretz anhem selah. So, you see that this mizmor, this psalm, is trying to convey a message to you. And the way that the Navi, the prophet, conveys the message to you, he has something he wants to say to you. There's a lot of ways to say something. The way this type of structure ends up having impact on you is by highlighting what he wants to say, by bold-facing what he wants to say, by underlining what he wants to say. How do you highlight? How do you bold-face? How do you underline? How do you capitalize? How do you italicize today? You just simply do it. In the ancient world, the way you use all of those literary devices is by literary structure, by the way you put the words together, so that the reader looks at them and he sees this mizmor is working towards the middle. It's pointing towards something. It's pointing towards, now we'll look at the key words. The key words of this mizmor are, on the left column, one, goyim. He uses all of the words that refer to nation. One is goyim. Two, you see, two and eight is amim. Three and seven is amim. Four and six is le'umim. And five in the middle is amim. Now that's the one that goes by a lot of people who know the symmetry of this mizmor. Talking about all of the words that refer to nation in the Hebrew language, you could say goyim, you could say le'umim, you could say amim. He uses goyim one time, and then in the subsequent seven times, he makes the chiasmus on the key word usage by saying amim, 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 le'umim, le'umim, and he surrounds the key central word, amim, with tishpot, ki tishpot, amim, mishor. The text consists of how many words altogether without superscription? Who knows? 49 words. You see where it says 49? In the column it says word, no super, no superscription. There are 49 words. What's the center of 49? The center of 49 is 25. You see the word on your sheets where it says center? You see the center word? He made it the center word. So when you look at the text, you can't miss it. It's not somewhat at the middle of the text. It's not close to the middle. You look at it and it is the middle. So,
what makes it key words?
What makes it key words is that the message that's being conveyed over here is that this mizmor is about the nations of the world recognizing God, being in awe of Him, giving thanks to Him, and the reason for it, is because God judges the world with mishor, with equity. Ki tishpot, amim, mishor. The key phrase of the entire mizmor is that you judge the world with equity. This way, the prophet, the Navi, Hashem through the Navi, has conveyed a message to you in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways. The chiasma, which we said is the inversion, exists. The parallelism doesn't exist on one level. The parallelism exists all over the place. It exists within a verse. It exists within verses. It exists within the larger structure of the mizmor. The key words are being emphasized. They're being highlighted to you. Can't miss your key words because they're sort of like the way we did it in this sheet with the use of computers and being able to color it. You can't miss it on this sheet, but if you don't, if you know the literary techniques that are being used by the Tehillim, you can't miss the message that we're talking about with you. It's explicit. The intention, of course, is to inspire you. The intention of this is to light you up. It's to make you look at it, be able to contemplate it, be able to read it, be able to absorb it, be able to get the feeling, listen carefully now, the feeling that the Navi, that God, through the prophet, wants to, see over here, when you say God through the prophet, it's very strange because it's the Tehillim is the person talking to God. So it's a prophetic message. It's nevuah. It's inspired message. It's inspired with God, but it's man talking to God. Very difficult concept. The Torah, on the other hand, this the Torah is the opposite. The Torah is God talking to man. V'deber Hashem Moshe Lemor, right? It's always this way. Tehillim is always the individualist talking to God. So this parallel, so to speak, that's why I quoted that Gemara to you, that strange awareness that they had that in some way the Torah and Tehillim seemed to correspond in some way, not by accident. These five books to those five books. That message is coming towards us. The other message is coming from us going towards God. It's very strange. Now, the Navi wants to express his feelings to you. His emotions, the person, the individual, the writer, has a lot to say. How is he going to transmit his message over thousands of years to different nations and different times, different places? We'll go to 76 in a minute. I want to say something else. This is a very difficult thing to say in a lecture. Give me 2 seconds to say it. The message that you're supposed to get by seeing all of these things so clearly like this, so sharply like this, he's talking to you. If he's here in the room, he would tell you what we just now said. He would say it to you. The way, when you have literary devices like this, they come across very clearly. So, how does he do it? He does it like we just described. We have, in our Sidurim, safe to say, this menorah. And this menorah has all kinds of, people think that it has magical incantations involved with it. And really, all the individual, you could see clearly from this, did, was he saw in this mizmor a structure which has 7 verses in it. And they're all very, if you look at your Sidurim, you'll see that they're all very structured. If you'll give these out real quick, this will take 2 minutes, and you'll see what I mean. Sometimes when you see these things in retrospect, they look to you, you look and say, oh, there's some kind of magical incantation involved with this menorah. All he did was try to say to you, the person who took the words and put them in the menorah, he tried to tell you, I can graphically represent the message being conveyed by the prophet by putting it in a menorah. And if you look at the sheets that I gave you, I need one myself. Yeah. If you look at them, you take a look at the key verses and how he simply took it, left, and brought it around. He took the key verse and he paralleled them. You see this top part of the bar of the menorah. In fact, if you turn your sheets sideways, you end up with the menorah. He took it. He took one verse. I did it right at the verse. You see two. Put it all the way into one arm. Took the other one, put it into the other arm. Took the other two, which are parallel to each other, the Ladat Ba'aretz and the Eretz Natna Yibulah, and he put them on the next section. Then he took Yoduch Amim, Yoduch Amim, which is very close, which is the ones here and here. And then he took the main line, you see it? The main center verse, he put it in the middle. And he said, wow, it's so easy. If I just take it and I put it in a menorah, I have for myself a way to point out to the reader a graphical representation of what's very, very plain to see.
To have a 7-6 mizmor.
Exactly. Exactly. We're going to talk about other mizmorim, but 1 minute. Before we go off of it, you notice one quick last thing here. 1, 2, 3. There are 3 center points to the menorah. You see it? The base. What did he put in the base? Tishpot, Amim, Mishod. What did he put in the middle of the base? Amim. Exactly. He put the center word. So he said, it's great. If I take him as more, not only am I able to show you its breakdown, its parallelism, its chiasmus, its key words, I could even show you the key word of the key words. The center. In closing, how many key words are there? Huh? Eight. How many verses are there in total in this mizmor? So you have eight verses. You have eight key words. The additional thing that we found, and that's when we talked about patterns, right? We talked about structure. This is what you call structure in Tehillim, folks. We additionally talked about patterns. You see that there are eight key words? You know what we found out? We found out there's not accidentally eight key words. We found out that this emphasis of the covenant, like you see it being emphasized over here, that the nations of the world will give thanks to God, this covenantal emphasis is in fact a pattern that flows throughout the mizmurim. And that's going to be related to the next mizmur, which we're going to go to right now before the conclusion of the lecture. The other thing that you saw on this is eight verses. So there's eight verses, there's eight key words. In the next mizmor, we're going to look at chiasma from another angle. We're going to look at patterns from another angle. As you so aptly put it, well, it's very nice. If I have seven of them, I could do it. That's why he put it in a menorah. It's the only one that anybody ever graphically represented. You know why? Because there's seven of them. And it's perfect. And it fits. And he said, I'll do it. It was never meant to be a magical incantation. It was meant to be something like what we did here. He said, wow, if I do this, when I was working on the computer, I said, wow, if I do this, I could show someone how beautiful the mizmor is. Hopefully it'll inspire them with the message. They'll understand what it means for justice to reign in the world and for the nations of the world, and they'll see how the Navi is talking to you right in the room and inspiring you and writing the message, hopefully get into your kishkes. Now, everybody, take a look at Mizmor 76 in the back of your sheets that you had handed out with the yearly prayer section. You have a Mizmor 76 in there. 76 is the third Mizmor in the third book. The fourth book in the third book of the fourth Mizmor in the third book of Tehillim. You have it? Everybody have it in front of you? I'm very, very happy to tell you that the next mizmor that we're going to look at, in fact, what we found in this mizmor is not known. People are not aware of it. We've done extensive research into seeing if anybody's aware of it, and in fact it isn't. And this is where we think the work, hopefully, will take our understanding of Tehillim and put it, you know, show how it in fact is a much more, much, much more unique than even we thought it was to begin with. Okay? Morris, you want to take an English translation so we can go fast? Not that English translation, because that's a dictionary form and it's very difficult. It's only for the ladies, you know? Yeah, anything. A JPS, that's fine. That's fine. Okay? Okay. Laminatzad, you know what? Mizmor la'asaf shir. This mizmor consists of 90 words with a 5-word superscripture. There's 85 words of text. When you read it, it says as follows. Noda bihuda Elohim, God, Hashem, is known in Judah. Bi'Israel, Gadol, Shemo, in Israel, his name is great. Of course, you already, now that, for those of the uninitiated, you're already getting familiar. Noda bihuda Elohim, God is known in Judah. In Israel, his name is great. That's an A. You see the parallelistic line. You see Judah being compared to Israel. You see the word Noda, known, being to Gadol. Gadol is what we call what? A tzedeking, in this case, emphatic, greater, an emphasis. He's known. In Israel, his name is great. Name being great is a step further than known. Judah, when you say Israel, Do you, in fact, by going from Judah to Israel, go on to the larger picture? Judah makes you think of the smaller one. Israel makes you think of the bigger one. So you see over here the parallelistic line, the parallel line, and you see how it's an AB, and you see how there's emphasis stands right out at you. The next verse, Vahi b'shalem sukkah, his sukkah is den, his sukkah, like in Sukkot, if you want to think of that word. Vahi b'shalem, in shalem, who knows what shalem is in the room? Anybody? And I mean anybody. Well, why is it, where is it called shalem? Where do we have the word shalem? Yerushalayim, right? When we say Yerushalayim, the word is always spelt, you know, hasir. It's spelt Yerushalayim. Anybody ever notice that? The word is spelt that way. It doesn't have the yud in the Torah. So it's spelt Jerusalem. Yerushalayim. Jerusalem, in English, is literally, they took the Hebrew word and transliterated it right into English. Yerushalayim. Jerusalem. It's Yerushalayim, right? But that's how it's spelt. So, that word Shalem is the ancient, the early name of Jerusalem. Vahibish Shalem Sukkot Umon Ator. And what is Ma'on?
His dwelling place.
His dwelling place? Bitzion, in Zion. Now, again we have it. This one is Gadol. I'm sorry. Shalem is the earlier name of Jerusalem. The later name of, and the latest name. The latest name of Jerusalem is, everybody? Sion. A sukkah is what kind of a dwelling?
Temporary.
What's a ma'on?
Permanent.
So you see again, it furthers. There's emphasis once again.
And chiasmus,
exactly. Next verse. Shema Shabbat Ishfir Kashit. I think, I don't have vowels here.
Yeah.
There he broke the fiery...
The arrows of the bow.
Anybody have another translation here? There he what?
He broke
the flashing arrows. Right? Yeah, the keshet is the bow. I don't know what they're doing here. I'd much rather say, there he broke the fiery bow, so to speak, right? Magan, the shield, the herev, and the sword, umilhama, and the war. Does everybody get that? There. Where is there that he did this God? That he broke the bow and the shield, the fiery one, and the shield, and the sword, and the war. In Jerusalem. There, somewhere. Something is being reminisced right now by the prophet. He's reminiscing. He says, he was known in Yehuda. Like whoever's talking, Yehuda and Sion, the person who's talking... talking from a state of Sion being the reality. The Shalem name, he's talking about ancient times to present times. He's talking about the ancient, wonderful happenings, how God did these amazing miracles. Na'orata, you are awesome, God. Adir meharere tarif, you are more Adir? Awesome. No, not awesome. Adir. Anybody have anything besides
excellent.
More excellent, more noble, okay, more glorious? Glorious, I like glorious. You are more glorious than the mountains of prey. What is a mountain of prey? Very, very difficult word to understand. The mountains of Tarif, the mountains of prey. Prey means where the people, the individuals, were preyed upon. You could be preyed upon by animals, preyed upon by human beings. Eshtolilu abire lev. The stout-hearted, the Abir, the strong, the mighty, the stout-hearted, Ishtolilu, they became confused. Namu Shinatam, they slept their sleep, Velo Matzu Kol Anshe Hail Yidehem. And the men of valor, these stout-hearted men, couldn't find their hands. You know, of course, Abire Lev and Anshe Hail is again paralleled, correct? They slept their sleep, and they got up, and they couldn't find their hands. What does it mean when they say they couldn't find their hands? They were in state of confusion. They didn't know if they were coming or going. Migaratcha, Elohei Yaakov, from your blast, God of Jacob, Nirdam. He was in a stupor, Verechev, and the
chariot, vesus, and the horse. Ata nora, that's the end of verse 7. Ata nora ata, you are awesome, you are. It's like emphasis. You are awesome, you are. Umi amod lefanecha, who can stand before you? Me'aza pecha, from when you are angry. Mishamayim hishmata din, from the heavens you let the judgment be heard, be heard. Eretz yare'ah, the land was in awe. It was in awe. The shakata? Yeah. And was quiet. Bekum lemashpat Elohim, when God rose in judgment, l'hoshia kol anvi aretz, to save all of the lowly of the land. Selah, like the other Selah after verse 4. We have two Selahs in this mizmor. Ki hamat adam todeka, because the anger of man will give thanks to you. The anger that is pent up in man, something like this, guys, todeka, will give thanks to you. Sherit hemor tahgor, and you're going to take the rest of anger and you're going to gird yourself in it. So the anger of man is going to end up giving thanks to you, and whatever is left over of that anger, you're going to gird yourself in it. It's thinking of God as girding himself, like you gird yourself, right? Like a warrior girds himself. You'll gird yourself with the rest of it. Nidru, he says now, you know what? Make vows. Shalmu la'ashem elokechem, v'shalmu, what? Shalemu la'ashem elokechem, calls to be vowed. Pay to him, right? All you who surround him, yubilu shayla mura, will bring a gift to the awesome one. Yibaser ruach negidim, yibtsor ruach negidim. He will curb the spirit of the princes. Nura limalche eretz, he is awesome, aretz, awesome to the kings of the land. Okay. This mizmor, when you read it, this is what happens in Tehillim. This is why we think this is special, and I'll try and get this in the next 7.5 minutes. When you read it, and when you read all of Tehillim, and all Tehillim classes, it's very difficult to give a class in Tehillim, because when a guy finishes reading Tehillim, he sort of gets like this. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, please, 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 I hope, I hope, I hope, and thank you, and I'm in trouble, and come through, and thank you, and please, 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 and after a while you fall asleep. But the reason for that is that usually we don't know what's being said. We know very little of the message being conveyed, and we read it. It has some kind of an impact on us, but after that, this one is one of the very, it's like little esoteric from your blast. They fell asleep, they woke up, you were great. When we did our work on this mizmor, we found that in fact, the work we had done analyzing the covenantal symbolism in the Tehillim, similar to the covenantal symbolism in, similar to the covenantal symbolism in the Torah, we found that it indicates, that it enlightens, that it opens up, and here's what it does for you. It shows you what the mizmor is talking about. Shows you the message being conveyed. It inspires you with the message. It has sequence in it, because we found out, that's what we're going to talk about in the later lectures, that in fact, to understand this mizmor, if you see the mizmorim before it and the mizmorim after it, they flow. And that they're not just cells in and of themselves, these mizmorim, but these psalms, believe it or not, are like a book. They're a book, like you're reading. Book 1, book 2, book 3, book 4. And everybody thinks that they just happen to be a conglomeration of mizmorim. And we don't have it on record that there's any kind of sequence to talk of. But what we're finding, in fact, is that the mizmorim are, we think, really flowing like a story from one to the other. And you can actually open up a book, start reading, and like you read a story, you could actually sense the flow of the text, and one leads into the next. Just we didn't say this. And not only does that, what does that do for you? You know, sometimes when you have a parallel verse in Tehillim, what happens when you have a parallel line, AB? If you don't know what B means, look at A.
If you know what A means, you say B is some kind of a aspect of it, because the word is a very strange word. You have difficulty. Or if you don't know what this verse means, look at the next verse, context. Imagine what it's like if we'll be able to look at context on a larger scale and look at the mizmor before and the mizmor after and be able to indicate on where the mizmor is going. That's a fantastic thing that we're finding here. Furthermore, we find that when you see the covenantal structure in the mizmor, which is unknown before Rabbi Sassoon introduced all these wonderful ideas to us, he introduced the concepts to us and these popped out. It was like he gave us a combination. I want to let you know that don't think that these discoveries were made by me. These discoveries are discoveries they made. Someone came and gave us a key, and he said, here's the combination. And once you have that combination, these things start to open, and they flow very quickly. So, in fact, that's what we want to try and show you, and these sheets. Take a look at them. The Mizmor consists of 85 words. When I saw Ata Nora Ata, I said, you know, I wonder, you remember our 67? You remember Kitishpot Amim Mishor? Amim being the middle word, the middle of verse, the middle key word, everything center. I said, what if this Mizmor works forwards and backwards? Ata, Nora, Ata. In English, it sounds strange. You are awesome, you are. I said, you know, this Mizmor is a Mizmor that talks about God's being awesome. So it's like, I wonder if this is the middle of the verse of the Mizmor. So I went and I counted. If you look, those of you who are already familiar with these sheets, I don't know what this black line is, but anyway, in any event, here's how it goes. There are 80, I'm talking about the black line and word total reverse column on the right-hand side, where all of a sudden there's blue and it just turns, it's not supposed to be that way. But in any event, the printer made a mistake. In any event, you'll notice when I said, could Atan Ura Ata be the center of this mizmor, in fact, I counted it. I remember I was on a plane going to Chicago. And I almost jumped out of my seat because I didn't expect it to work. And I saw, well, there's 85 words. And I counted it. And I saw that it was the 42nd, 43rd, and 44th word. And I said, one second now, 85 words. What is the middle of 85? 43. The center of it. 42 and 42 is 84. The middle is 85. The 43rd word. So I said, I'd like to see, when I counted it, I backtracked, I said, I'd love it to be 42, 43, and 44. Sure enough, it was 42 and 43 and 44, as you see. It was the exact dead center of the mizmor, similar to 67. You said seven. Seven verse. This one is not. This one has how many verses? 13. The key word at the center word lands where? The eighth verse. Patterns, guys. What did I say? I said, oh, wait a minute now. Here we have those covenantal numbers again. There's 13 verses. It's the eighth of the 13th verse. And the key words being emphasized are ata, nora, ata.
But you've gone from Kathy's superscription.
I said it works both ways. You'll have to, there's 150 of them. Give me time. I'll answer that question. It's a good question. How do superscriptures work? In the last year, we spent many, many, many months working on superscriptures, showing that they're not unimportant to the understanding of the mizmor. But the hour is late, so let me finish off this mizmor. Tanura, ta, you are awesome. So I looked at section 1. Take a look at section 1 where he says, Nodat bihudat Elohim b'Yisrael. You remember the what it says? You're known, you were there, you broke. You see the last two words before Selah? On the left-hand column, the 22nd and 23rd words. What are they? Sword, the sword, and the war. You see that? It's highlighted for you. You see the Selah? I put it in black. The Selah has a break, okay? There's another section. You see section 2, how it opens up? What are the words? What does Na'od mean? You are awesome, correct? You are, I'm sorry, light. You are bright. But if you look at the word Nora, which is in the center of this mizmor, what are the letters? Nun, Vav, Resh, Aleph. This one is Nun, Aleph, Vav, Resh. So I said, wow, Here's, we have another literary technique. He took the word na'or, nora, which is the key, which is awesome, and he said, what? You shine. Well, shine is another way of saying you're bright, you shine, you're awesome. And he turned it and he made it the first word of section 2. So I said, wow, section 2 is a clear section now. We were right to take the selah and put it out, sort of say, this selah is being used as a break point. He then said, you are more glorious than the mounds of prey, and the stout-hearted woke up, right? They couldn't find their hands. Nirdam, they were in a stupor. Last two words of section 2. Verechev, Vesus. So we have the two concluding words of section 1, the sword and the war. The two concluding words of section 2, the chariot and the horse. Said, wow, he closed it off. Now, how did I know to say that's the end of the section? I did not know. I said, it has to be the end of the section. And the words, ata, nora, ata, stand above the text. Do you follow? They're above the text. How did I know that that was the intention of the Nevi? Well, you'll notice how many words there are in section 1. How many are there? Column that says word without selah and center. That column, how many words there in section 1, 2? Hedev and milhama. 18 words. How many words are there in section 2? How much? 22. Well, I went to atanura atah, and I put it above the text. It is the middle. It is backwards. It is forwards. It is central. It is key. It's being emphasized to you. It is being used, the play on the letters, to describe his lawsomeness in the beginning of section 2. Section 3 says, how many words in section 3? And that 18 is without the use of the three central words. What is the message over there? Do you see the word yare'ah? The land is in awe when you judge the land, right? And there, when justice comes to the world and you come to save, who do you save? Anve'aretz, the lowly of the land. You see it highlighted? The 17 and 18th words? Section 4 has na'orata. Section 3 has yare'ah. Section 4 has lamora. And then it says, yibatsir, yibtsor ruach nekidim. He will curb the spirit of the princes, Nora, awesome, Lemalche Eretz, to the kings of the earth. What is the last two words of section 3? And the last two words of section 4? Melche Eretz. He's contrasting for you. He's using alliteration, does the kind of techniques where he says, you should catch it. He's saying, Herev and Melchama, Rechev and Sus, An Ve Eretz, Melche Eretz. So he couldn't have gotten more. You know, again, the thing of highlighting, focusing, making you be aware of the message being conveyed. And here, we see it clearly that the Mizmor is written 18 words in section 1, Selah. 22 words in section 2. Three central key words, Atanura, Atas, standing as a crown, as a majestic sort of, you know that Minura? And this one, it's like majestic. It's like a mountaintop. It's like, you are awesome, God, for those wonderful things that you did. And then 18 words talking about how he comes through for the lowly of the land and how in section 4 he will curb the kings of the land. So you have Anve Eretz, Melche Eretz, Herev Melchama, Rechev and Sus. Of course, at that juncture, we realize another thing. How many words are there in all four sections, Dr. Rumi? 80. Exactly. It's exactly 80 words. Now, the odds that we're going to find this repeatedly, you see, of course, 22 and 18 is 40. And 22 and 18 is 40. And 40 and 40 is 80. That's why we have that highlighted in the bottom right-hand side of your sheets when you see that there are 80 words. Now, you'll say like this, but there are not 80 words. I have a text that consists of a message with 80 words. What did it do for us? It stressed the covenant. It stressed how God, Hashem, upheld his part of the covenant to the Jewish people. That's the 80. You were awesome. You were amazing. You came through for us. From ancient times you came through. Present times you came through. Till today. And of course, you know what he's going to continue talking about in the sequence of the third book of Tehillim. The third book of Tehillim, this is the 76th Mizmor. In the next three Mizmorim, he will talk about the destruction of Jerusalem.
In 586
BCE, 2,500 years ago. That's our Tisha B'Av commemoration, right? That's what he will talk about. And this is where he is now reminiscing. Prior to discussing that, he's reminiscing how amazing God was and how that isn't the case today. And that is, you know, it's sad. But the reality is he remembers how awesome God was in the past. And he sort of encircles the statement of awesomeness with the covenant. And he does it with the use of 13 verses, with the use of 80 words, and with highlighting to you his central message.
Weeks.
We'll be able to bring you more Mizmorim like that, like the 23rd Psalm, Mizmor David, or like Mizmor Shilim HaShabbat, or like Hashem Malach Ke'ut Labish Labish, and we'll try and show you 92, 93, 23, and we'll try and show you more and more of how this picture develops. We'll try maybe and talk about some of the historical backdrops and then actually take you into sequence where you can sense how the Navi is conveying a message to you that is really one that's a prophetic message and is meant to take you, hopefully, to higher heights.
Okay. All right.
That's very hard.